Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. Can you hear that? Can you hear the calm of the waves here? We're standing on the beach near where the Teleri build their ships. This is a location that we haven't been to in exactly 538 years. 538 years ago, the moon and then the sun appeared in the sky. 538 years ago, the Noldor crossed in to Beleriand to chase down Morgoth. Fëanor and his sons vowed to reclaim the Silmarils. And here we are now, 538 years later, and Erendil and Elwing and their three companions on their ship have set foot in Valinor. 538 years. And a lot has changed since then. But I find it fascinating to think about events from the perspective of the elves who never left Valinor. They've lived here for the last 538 days since the first kinslaying. These people, these boat makers, were killed, attacked by Fëanor and his sons. The people in the city up on the hill have been going about their regular lives, living amongst the Valar, just like they did before the First Age, as if nothing has happened. But how much do they know about Middle-earth, Beleriand, the wars with Morgoth? The souls of individuals who have fallen in Middle-earth have come back to Valinor, to the halls of Mandos. Are they walking around here too? Are they explaining stories and telling them what it's like to live over there, and yet nobody has lifted a finger to help? We don't get a whole lot from the perspective of these people, and we don't especially get much from the perspective of rebodied individuals who have now left the halls of Mandos. That's all still a bit of a mystery. But what we do know is that life is very much the same as it was before the kinslaying, before the Noldor decided to leave. And this is the world that Arendil and Elwing have come back into. And you have to remember, Arendil and Elwing were born in Beleriand. They did not come from this area. This is the first time they have seen the beautiful sights of Valinor. And here they are, braving, petitioning the gods for help. When we left off last week, we left off with Arendelle leaving the boat and talking with Elwing and saying, "Here none but myself shall set foot, lest you fall under the wrath of the Valar. But that people I will take on myself alone for the sake of the two kindreds." He's trying to keep her safe. He's trying to put all of the threat, all of the danger on himself so that she doesn't have to feel any of it. And yet she is as brave as he is, because she responds, "Then would our paths be sundered forever, but all thy perils I will take on myself also." There's beauty in that. She wants to be with him no matter what, because she is not scared. The only thing she's scared of is losing him. And so she leaps into the white foam and runs towards him. But yet, from Arendelle's perspective, we're told that he's sorrowful because he's afraid. He's genuinely afraid. It says here, he feared the anger of the lords of the West upon any of Middle-earth that should dare to pass the leaguer of Aman. Anyone who set foot here who shouldn't was under grave danger. And now both of them were. Now, something interesting transpires here. They say goodbye to their companions who stay on the boat, the three individuals who were faring the sea with them. Also brave individuals, by the way. This is dangerous not just for the two of them, but the three of the others as well. But then we get this weird twist. Then Arendelle said to Elwing, "Await me here, for one only may bring the message that is my fate to bear." So although she leaves the boat, runs up the beach, and joins him on the land, he instructs her to go no further. "Okay, you can come with me." Basically, you can come with me this far, but it's still only supposed to be one person who goes up and talks. And somehow I know that deep in my heart. Or it was in Ulmo's prophecy. And so I'm following the specifics of there being one individual. So I'll go do that. But you can stay here. I'll be right back. It's a little bit weird, but you know, that's kind of how this stuff goes sometimes. And he goes up alone onto the land and up through what is called I don't know how to pronounce this correctly because, of course, I don't. Calisiria? It means light cleft. There's a cleft in the hills and mountains up that go up into the main city, Tirion, upon Tuna. This like cleft in the cliffs. And it goes on and says, "And it seemed to him empty and silent. For even as Morgoth and Ungoliant came in ages past, so now Arendelle had come at a time of festival, and well nigh all the elven folk were gone to Valimar, or were gathered in the halls of Manwë upon Tenequitel, and few were left to keep watch upon the walls of Tirion." So there's a few things happening here. First of all, it's a little creepy. It's a little weird. He shows up on the shores expecting to come across all of these elves and maybe even some of the Valar walking around, some Maiar. He doesn't know what he's going to experience. And instead, he finds a ghost town. There's nobody here. So that's weird and kind of ominous for an elf. And think of it this way. Well, he's an elf man hybrid, and we're going to get to that. We don't know exactly what Arendelle and Elwing are yet. We just know that they are mixed blood. I mean, we know the specifics of the mixing, but I'll explain it a little bit later. But we have somebody of mixed blood, an elf, who normally it's the mannish people, it's the men, it's the humans who stray into the realm of elves, who stray into the realm of fairy. In this situation, we have somebody who represents all of the free people straying into the land of fairy. And this is odd. Nobody's here. This happens in fairy tales, by the way. Now, there's a second thing going on here as well. We are specifically called back to remember the time when Morgoth and Ungoliant came here ages ago, and they were at a time of festival then as well. That time Morgoth chose it. He chose that time because he knew there would be an opportunity. He knew they would all be in one place. And so we're getting bookends. This all started when Morgoth and Ungoliant attacked the trees. This is coming to an end at a time of festival as well. This is not one of those like, maybe we'll just say that it'll be interesting because it'll show up and nobody will be there. No, this is bookended. There's a reason for this. This is fate happening. Now, we are told here that as he enters the city, and you have to remember, he has the Silmaril with him, and it is shining. And the people here know that light. And we're told that some were there who saw him from afar and the great light that he bore, and they went in haste to Valimar. And then Arendil climbs the great hill of Tuna, and again, finds it empty. And so he enters the streets of Tirion and finds them empty. And then we're given a glimpse of his emotional state. His heart was heavy, for he feared that some evil had come even to the blessed realm. Where is everybody? Are they gone? That's what he's asking. That's not in the text, by the way. The where is everybody? That was me. So he walks through these deserted walkways, roads in between the buildings. And then we're given this really interesting note here. The dust upon his raiment and his shoes was a dust of diamonds, and he shone and glistened as he climbed the long white stairs. Every time Tolkien uses light imagery, diamonds, he refract light. He is wielding on his body a Silmaril, which is casting the most beautiful of light. This dust is acting, it says, is of diamonds. Maybe that's true. But either way, whether it's true or symbolic, it is expanding the glow of the light coming off of him and reflecting and refracting around his body. He is a beacon of light. And then he goes up the long white stairs, which are illuminated even more brightly by him. And he calls out in many tongues, every language that he knows, both of elves and men. And nobody answers. He can't find anyone. And then we're told this, quote, "Therefore, he turned back at last toward the sea. But even as he took that shoreward road, one stood upon the hill and called to him in a great voice, crying, 'Hail, Elrindil, of mariners most renowned, the looked for that cometh at unawares, the longed for that cometh beyond hope. Hail, Elrindil, bearer of lights before the sun and moon, splendor of the children of earth, star in the darkness, jewel in the sunset, radiant in the morning.'" That voice was the voice of Eonwe, herald of Manwë. And he came from Valimar and summoned Arendil to come before the powers of Arda. Can you imagine this? Desperate, looking for anybody, and then all of a sudden, when you're ready to pack it up and leave, because you feel like everybody must be gone, there's something must be wrong, what is going on? Up on a hill nearby is the sight of a Maiar, someone you've never seen before, and they know you. And their words exclaim that you are the one they've been waiting for. And on top of that, you're called a star in the darkness, a jewel in the sunset, radiant in the morning. You are the light, literally and figuratively, of the people of Middle-earth coming back to the Holy Land. All of this section of this work gives me chills, and I have a feeling many of you will feel the same. There is so much. This whole section is packed with beauty and meaning. It is so powerful. And then we are told, and Arendil went to Valinor and to the halls of Valimar, and never again set foot upon the lands of men. We're given this whole like spoiled moment, you know, we're like, oh, maybe he goes back. Yeah, we're told no, he doesn't. He doesn't ever go back. Now we aren't told why here. We're just told that he doesn't. Then the Valar took counsel together, and they summoned Ulmo from the deeps of the water. Good idea, Valar, because he's the only one who's been keeping track of the people, right? Like, he's the one who knows what's going on. And Arendil stood before their faces and delivered the errand of the two kindreds. Pardon, he asked for the Noldor, and pity for their great sorrows, and mercy upon men and elves, and succor in their need. And his prayer was granted.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our new patrons for joining us and all of the people who help support this show. Let's shout out Who Let the Juan Out? Wonderful name. And Teresa S. I feel like I read these funny names and then the next person just feels like they have to one-up the previous people. That's great. Also, Teresa S., going up the list, we had Rivqua upgraded to the tier 3 patrons. You're gonna get t-shirts and stuff. That's awesome. Thank you for doing that. Dan O, Ryan S, Wesley K, Warper, and David T. Welcome all of you to the Patreon. Thank you for being here and for supporting this show, this endeavor that I've been working on for a while now. I very much appreciate the support. And we have to shout out our VIP patrons, Austin C, Azezrezel, Bo, man, words are hard, Brad S, Brandy D, Chewbacca, Christopher D, David S, David M, Drupal, Esoteric Rage, Gavin Alaf, Goldberry, Jesse P, Katie S, Capenna, Larry, Lauren C, Michael E, Nick K, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Patrick W, Rivqua, Sam B, Shannon L, T-Rex, TJT, Tour, Son of Whore, Tyler M, Wes P, and Who Let the Juan Out? Thank you for joining me and for being here. That is amazing. And like usual, we have some new reviews on Apple Podcasts. This one comes from Bug Diamond in the United States, who writes, couldn't recommend enough. Heavy LOTR fan, lightly enjoy it. Either way, this is such a fun listen. I love the storytelling with added insights and perspective, a great way to learn new details and lore about a vast story. Well, thank you so much, Bug Diamond. This next one comes from Maria Organa from Germany. I don't know if you're like a Star Wars person. That sounds like a Star Wars name, but welcome. Thank you for taking the time to leave a review. This one says, wonderful. I love learning more about Tolkien's legendarium. Very well told, except for some pronunciations. Yeah, I know. Keep up the good work. Greetings all the way from Germany. Hello across the Atlantic. Thank you so much, Marie. And then we have Trey Gatt from the United States, who writes, the one podcast to rule them all? Question mark. I work for the Postal Service and listen to podcasts and books for the majority of my workday. This podcast has bumped all others down in queue. I'm about one third of the way through the episodes currently, 60-ish, and can't get enough. Then, when I finish this, I'll have to check out Robot's other lorecasts, especially the Mass Effect one. Thank you so much for the obvious passion and care you give this world. Oh, thanks so much, Traygat. And I hope you enjoy the other shows if you check those out as well. And then one more from Benjamin Gard in the United States, who writes, great show. Really enjoy listening to this at work. Well, that's wonderful. Thank you for the review. And thank you to everybody who helped support the show. Also, if you listen on Spotify, of course, you can leave a 5-star rating, which helps a ton, or comment on the most recent episodes and tell me what you liked about them. All of that stuff is extremely helpful. And all of you are wonderful. And I couldn't do it without you. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And forgot to mention, if you want to join on the Patreon, go to patreon.com/LOTR lorecast. And somebody mentioned recently that some of the links don't seem to work. I've gone through and updated them. So if they still look like they're not working, then maybe that was downloaded into your app at some point and just didn't get updated or whatever. But they all should work at this point. So, all right. Thanks for being here. Let's move on with the rest of the show. It is told among the elves that after Erendil had departed, seeking Elwing his wife, Mandos spoke concerning his fate. And he said, shall mortal man step living upon the undying lands and yet live? But Ulmo said, for this he was born into the world. And say unto me, whether is he Erendil Tuor's son, or the line of Hador, or the son of Idril, Turgon's daughter, or the elven house of Finwë? And Mandos answered, equally the Noldor who went willfully into exile may not return hither. But when all was spoken, Manwë gave judgment, and he said, in this matter the power of doom is given to me. Now let's unpack what all just happened. Erendil shows up, stands before the most powerful beings in the world, and petitions them for help. Basically says, we need your help. I have come for the two kindreds. I represent both. And not only do I represent elves and men in general, but I also seek pardon for all of the Noldor and their growing sorrows. And I ask you for mercy and for succor. Like, give us some help, please. Notice that among the Noldor include Fëanor's children. The very people who have now attacked their own kind in order to get back the Silmarils multiple times. Erendil offers them, or asks for them, mercy. This is a noble thing. This is a Christian thing. This is Tolkien's perspective on grace and mercy from his beliefs. And Erendil being somebody who is willing to turn the other cheek. That's got to be where this comes from. And there's something powerful in that. Whether you're a Christian or not, there's something powerful. Grace and mercy, redemption, sacrifice. These are powerful things in our world, regardless of your religious perspective, because they just are. And then we have a moment here where Mandos himself says, wait a minute, can we just let a mortal walk around in the Undying Lands and live? What is going on? Who is this? And then Ulmo reminds him, yeah, he's a mortal, but he's also from these other lineages. So who are we to say who he is? And then Mandos is like, well, the Noldor shouldn't be able to return here. They went into exile. And then Manwë says that he has the authority here. In this matter, the power of doom is given to me. The peril that he ventured for love of the two kindreds shall not fall upon Arendelle, nor shall it fall upon Elwing his wife, who entered into peril for love of him. But they shall not walk again ever among elves or men in the outer lands. And this is my decree concerning them. To Arendelle and to Elwing and to their sons shall be given leave each to choose freely to which kindred their fates shall be joined, and under which kindred they shall be judged. It is in this moment right here, that anyone who is of mixed blood, of mixed lineage, is given the right to choose their fate. So Elrond and Elros, these are their children. They are half-elven. That's what they are called. And it is in this moment that each of them is given the right to choose if their fate will fall in line with the elves or mortal men. Elrond chooses elves. Elros chooses men. We know this from the events of The Lord of the Rings. Elrond's daughter eventually makes the choice for mortal men, because she is also of mixed blood. This is what ties into those decisions that get made. This is what gets tied into Elrond's apprehension in the movies about her being with Aragorn and the sorrow that that will bring, because he's seen it before. And yet she feels like that's her fate. That's who she is. That is the life and the fate that she has set for herself. And that all traces back to this very moment, to the events that happen here, to Arendelle and Elwing braving showing up in Valinor. And then we're given this wonderful section here. We've been following Arendelle around, and we go back to Elwing. Now when Arendelle was a long time gone, Elwing became lonely and afraid. And wandering by the margin of the sea, she came to Aqualunde, where lay the Teleriand fleets. There, the Teleri befriended her, and they listened to her tales of Doriath and Gondolin and the griefs of Beleriand, and they were filled with pity and wonder. And there Arendelle, returning, found her at the Haven of the Swans. But ere long they were summoned to Valimar, and there the decree of the Elder King was declared to them. So she goes around. She's bored. She's hanging out by the sea and then follows the sea over to the town of the Teleri and notices the fleet of ships and all the beautiful things that they've made. And then finally comes across people and makes friends and tells them stories of all the things going on across the ocean. And they're like, wow, that's amazing. And then Arendelle shows up and they hang out for a little bit longer. And then they're summoned back, and this decree is told to them that they are to choose their destinies. Then Arendelle said to Elwing, "Choose thou, for now I am weary of the world." And Elwing chose to be judged among the firstborn children of Iluvatar because of Lúthien. And for her sake, Arendelle chose alike. Though his heart was rather of the kindred of men and the people of his father. So he's like, I'm exhausted. You choose. I will let you make this decision. And she says, basically, that she is of her grandmother's line, Lúthien. And this part is interesting because Arendelle, we're told, he feels more like he is of the line of men. And yet, he doesn't want to be without her, so he goes with her choice anyway, so that they can stay together. It's a very interesting concept here, this idea that he went against his nature in order to have the thing that he valued above anything else, and to never leave her. And we're getting close to the end of this episode. It is on us. But something amazing happens next. And I'm going to save that for the next episode, because I feel like this wraps up this whole perspective, this whole experience of them in Valinor, and as much as we know about it. and the very real personal experience that they're having. But coming up next, something amazing happens. Something, another one of those moments, I should say, that feels like it's straight out of myth and is unbelievable and yet beautiful and powerful at the same time. I'll see you next time and have a wonderful week.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.